just like that.
When I move it, move it.
Just like that.
When I move it, move it.
Just like that.
Welcome to the Coach's Box for another year. This is we're still in the fifth year technically, because we started it April 5 years ago. Need to stop that the song going off again. As usual, at the start of a season, we are a little bit disorganised, but it is the day of the release of Dream Team and Super Coach. And as usual, I have my partner in brown and gold coloured crime with me, Molly. Molly, how was your off season?
It was good. I took it pretty much off. Didn't do much, so not much Dream Team preparation. I thought I'd let all the other suckers, I mean, experts do that, and I'll just cherry pick off them, I think.
Well, I'm hoping. I think you also basked in the glory as I did of beating Dr. Dream Team last year. That was my only claim to fame, but I'm hoping to do a repeat the dose again this year. That's pretty much my only goal for this year. So, what are your goals for this year? You're shooting for a certain ranking, or what's your aim for this year?
Oh, I'm definitely going for as high as possible. And yeah, I think I'm going to try and take a few risks this year and try and set up to try and win the car if I could. It's probably out of range. I've had two around the 300 mark finishes, so I've gone into both the last two seasons with extra cash and a mid-price sort of strategy, so I'm going to take spend a bit more of that money this year and maybe take a few risks, including a very interesting risk in the forward line, I think some would say.
Mm. Well, we'll get to that later, but that's not an idle question, because, of course, there are a few changes to Dream Team and Supercoach this year, which are related to, obviously, the addition of the GWS to the competition, taking it to 18 teams. So the leagues are now going to be 18 teams full, and of course that does mean that we have a set of 3 weeks of buys in the middle of the season. And in their wisdom, Virtual Sports, aka Vapor Media, who run both the competitions, have decided to revert back to pretty much the same system as they had the previous year before last year, with obviously the extra buys every week. With the 17 teams. Now, I mean, there was a fair amount of lobbying behind the scenes. I certainly tried to get a result which was a little more flexible for fantasy coaches, but sadly that wasn't to be the case, Molly. And it turns out that pretty much no one's going to be immune from the donuts this year because of that buy situation. Everyone, without fail, pretty much, is going to have to eat a donut at some stage. So, I mean, I realise that everyone's in the same boat, but it's not really a great result, I think, and it takes a little bit of the fun out of it. Molly, do you agree with me there?
Yeah, it's going to make it really tricky for those buy rounds, as you mentioned, and in that way, with so many teams having a buy in the 1 week, I think it's six, isn't it, each round, it's going to be really tricky, and especially in the ruck position, it's going to be interesting how we get around that. And I mean, we're all looking at strategies to get around the buys without, I think, considering that there's every chance that through those rounds you may have injured players that you weren't allowing for as well. So, I mean, if you've got a few injuries to players or suspensions at about the same time they've got that other players have got buys, it's going to be extremely difficult.
So I guess there's a few. I mean, well, apart from anything else, as you say, there's no margin for error through that buy period. Every injury is going to result in a donut. You're going to have no emergencies, or if you do have an emergency, it's going to mean a donut every week in another week in that 3 week period. So, I mean, there could have been an option to have an extra, there's three. That's the only difference between the system from the couple of years ago. There are now three trades during the buy period and 24 overall. I was hoping that we would be able to get four during the buy period, but that wasn't to be the case. So I wrote a big blog post, which is on the front page of Fan Footy, about how this is before the positions were released, about how you could, you know, you could manage not to get a donut by having all these rucks, you know, ruck slash forwards, and using Petrie and Roughhead or some of these high profile, you know, starting ruck forwards, and it ended up, unfortunately, none of them actually got dual position eligibility. So it is actually a matter of not avoiding donuts, it's actually just minimising donuts, or to the extent of maybe you don't want to necessarily start, you know, players who are only going to get 40 or 50 anyway. It's a matter of timing your donuts for the least amount of pain, I suppose. Which, I mean, it's not really the way we've been doing things in fantasy, but it's just the way it's going to be this year, Molly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point, that maybe it's better to take a zero in 1 week and have, you know, 80, 90, 100 guy the other 22 rounds, rather than, as you say, take a 50 or whatever. I think the other thing that we've had from the last few years also that will come into play is what happens at the end of the year with the two, at least two weaker teams, in, and if you throw in Port Adelaide there as well. There could be some fake buys at the end of the year with teams resting players. I believe, from just having a quick look at the DT Talk, had a article up analysing the strength of people's fixtures, and towards the end I think Hawthorn have a pretty weak run where they could rest players if their position was somewhat locked in at that point in the season. So again, we could have players rested late in the season to get them through.
And of course during the bye period there could be, you know, obviously Dane Swan was the template last year. He took an extra week off during the bye period last year to go off to Arizona. And the AFL is nothing if not, follow the leader competition. And I'm sure there's plenty other teams who have not necessarily Arizona itself, but have other locations they would send some of their players to refreshen them up during the season. So we may see, you know, extended breaks over that bye period. So who knows? Well, I mean, there's all these arguments, but I mean, ideally we'd have an unlimited trade system. That's a very old hobby horse of mine, but unfortunately it's not going to happen. So anyway, let us not bang on about that more than we need to. But anyway, we've dealt with that, and I'm sure people do get a little bit bored with the industry stuff. So I'll try to keep that to a minimum. One last thing though, Molly, just before we get on to the player analysis, which we'll do rucks and forwards today. We'll leave the mids and the backs for another week. But on the industry thing, it appears Fox Footy has launched today its new channel, obviously, or the Fox Sports has now got its own dedicated football channel again. As of, you know, 5 years ago during the Clinton Gribus era, that was, they had a Fox Footy, and now it's come back again. And you would have thought that they would invest in more local content, possibly a fantasy footy show, but sadly it appears they've launched without a dedicated fantasy football show, despite the fact that there was a pilot for a show called The Fan Show, starring the DT Talk Boys, amongst others, bandied around during the off-season. It appears that may not get up, at least not on Fox Footy. So that's a bit of a disappointment, isn't it, Molly?
Yeah, I would have thought so. I would have thought that if you, really, with the amount that fantasy footy is being pushed and is coming into the mainstream, that you would start to look to push it on your channel if you're going to do it. I guess what they'll probably do is have it integrated into other aspects of other shows, which is a bit disappointing. I mean, you'd think that 24 hours a day they could spend a little bit of money on having a dedicated show. But I mean, it's absolutely started to get the push now that it's open. It almost seemed, I was listening to 3AW tonight and they had Herdy on, and it almost sounded like the presenters there, Jared Healy, who I'm not sure really knows his fantasy football that much, was getting fed questions to ask from a fantasy dream team sense. So I think that's going to happen again this year, that there's still going to be a lot of media interest in it, but no dedicated, experts, but the so-called experts commenting on it.
All right, well, we've come to the 10-minute mark of the show, and that means we probably have spoken enough about industry stuff. let us get to a... Well, it's not a player review this time. It is a player preview. And, of course, I have listed in front of me the popularity indexes from the fan plan, which, of course, went off again this year. Of course, some people were quite happy to pay their money and use the Supercoach Gold or the Dream Team Assistant Coach products, which are fine. I'm not denigrating them at all. Fine products they are. But I have we had 4,000 teams in the fan planner this year, so I have some stats from those which I've used to compile a list of players in the various positions which I feel are either too popular or not popular enough. And I suppose we'll start, Molly, in the rucks. So we'll go through the rucks from top to bottom with the important players here. And we can't go past. I mean, the first player we have to talk about for 2012, Molly, is everyone's favourite. Everyone loves Big Cox. And the reason I want to talk about Dean Cox is he is wildly unpopular. I'm surprised at the lack of love for Dean Cox in fantasy this year. He is... Let me see where he is placed. He is number six in the popularity for rucks this year. I would have thought he did nothing wrong last year. He increased his time on ground. He increased his scoring. He dominated he was number one scoring ruck again, despite the rise of Nick Natanui. What is wrong with Dean Cox? Why is he number six in the popularity rankings?
Well, I think it's because of he had such an outstanding year last year and is getting older, to the older sense of his career, that people think there's more value in other players this year.
That is what I'm hearing. People keep on obsessing about upside, but I think with Cox, he's the best. He's going to score the highest again. Why not get him?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to say about that, and he's very reliable as well. And as you know, I mentioned before, that's going to be huge this year to have someone who's going to play each week in the ruck position, because you don't want them out for the weeks of the bye week. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the other thing that you're not sure of is what's going to happen with Nick Nat this year. Is he going to step up again and take time away from Cox
That's not how it happened last year. Both of them increased their time on ground. Both of them increased their scoring by about 10 points. So, I mean, I don't see any reason why that wouldn't happen again. Or I don't see Natanui necessarily taking away from Cox. They can play both of them on the ground at once. That's been shown.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true as well. And I mean, it is going to be, I think the other thing too that normally happens, I think anyway, I mean, you'd probably know this better than me, is that in the fan planning, you're trying to throw as many players in as you can. And often at that point of doing a team, which, in some senses, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but is sort of way early. I mean, a lot of the best information comes from closer to the season and the NAB Cup. So, I'm sure teams are going to totally change. But, you're trying to get as much value and you don't know as much about the rookies and whatever. So, to save 100K on a ruckman to go, let's say, Sandilands instead of Cox, that's a huge saving, and I think a lot of people would do that.
That is what surprised me about this, is that Sandilands, along with Matthew Leuenberger, there's pretty much three tiers up the top. There's Sandilands and Leuenberger up the top, and then there's, let me see, who is it? It's Mumford and McIntosh at a second tier, about half as popular as those two, and then there's another tier of McAvoy and Cox, a fair way back from them. So, if you're worried about Cox being old and prone to injury, what the hell is Sandilands? He's coming off a stress fracture of the foot. That's a terrible injury to come back from for a ruckman. I don't understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess the thing with that is that the feeling would be that he's got better value, as you said. He's got upside, so that his scoring was decreased because of the injury. So, maybe you can make some hay there in that sense.
I could certainly see Leuenberger challenging for that number one spot. You with me on that one? He certainly had a great finish to the season.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a lot of challenges either for his spot. in the Brisbane lineup. They're, I mean, they brought in a young ruckman, but I don't think he, you know, young ruckmen normally take time.
Now, speaking of challenges for spots, of course, the other big ruck situation this year is the return of Hamish McIntosh to the North Melbourne side. Todd Goldstein was a premium ruck scorer last year, and it turns out, in terms of fantasy popularity, McIntosh is actually a much more popular fantasy ruck. He's about three times more selected than Goldstein is. So the opinion of the fantasy community seems to be that McIntosh is going to eat into Goldstein's time, but I'm not sure that McIntosh is going to score enough points to make it worthwhile picking him as a starter. Molly, you on board with that?
Yeah, I think that one is going to be a tricky one. I mean, he has in the past, but he didn't have Goldstein to go up against in the past, so I think that's the issue. The only thing that goes, you know, that is on McIntosh's side, in my opinion, to possibly be a starter is he is not a bad forward. And with the new sub rule, the way it is, one less on the bench, he is going to play some time up forward, and he is going to be able to score some points up there.
This is Goldstein you're talking about.
McIntosh.
Yeah, that's the thing. McIntosh, I don't see McIntosh as a forward. Goldstein has shown that he can play forward, but I don't think McIntosh can, and I'm just a bit worried about that. I mean, that to me is the tension, is that McIntosh is not as flexible, but Goldstein has the runs on the board from the last 12 months, and it's pretty hard to say, okay, Todd, you can go back to the forward line and play the David Hale role or the Nick Natanui role, and you know McIntosh slots back into number one rock role. I don't see that because Goldstein has the right, I think, to remain as the number one rock. That's the problem for me.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that either. So you know, I do disagree slightly. I like McIntosh as a forward, not as a permanent forward, but as a changing forward.
Mm.
I think he can do some damage enough to keep his points up that he gets the rest of his points when he's on the ball. But I mean, yeah, it's a big risk coming off that injury again. And I mean, the other thing too, I'm just looking at the buy rounds, and I guess the big problem is that Brisbane North and West Coast, and to a lesser degree Gold, Greater Western Sydney, all have that first round 11 buy.
Mm.
So, you know, if you want to take in if you think Leuenberger is the challenger to Cox, you're not going to pick both of them because they're both going to miss that bye in round 11.
Yep.
And, you know, if you're going to go with, Giles or someone for your backup, you know, as one of your rucks, hoping that he might be playing at the time when your main ruck is out, then that's going to be the same week as both those guys,
yep.
And in fact all three of those guys and Goldstein as well. So I think that's probably a big reason why you wouldn't go Goldstein, you know, with the thought that McIntosh is going to take away and he's going to have the bye with the, you know, arguably the two best ruckmen in two of the best three ruckmen in the league in Leuenberger and Cox. And I wonder if that also means why Sanderlands didn't have that drop off, because his bye is in round 12. If he can get through to round 12, perhaps you trade him out at that point, knowing that at some point he is going to break down. Don't take the bye, bring in Cox at that point or something similar, you know. So I think those options are there as well.
Mm. My initial reaction to that is you don't trade out a premium, but of course this is the buy. You know, with the buys you're going to have to. So yes, that may be the case. All right. Also in the rucks. Now looking a bit further down the list there, Sam Jacobs is getting a bit of love. I think he's he's number 9 there, which is still about 10% of teams have Sam Jacobs in there. And I'm just also looking at Zach Smith. Now, Zach Smith, I'm not quite sure whether Zach Smith is going to be able to lift his numbers, because he's at that awkward price where he's, you know, priced, I think, about 60, 65 odd. And for that sort of price, you'd want him to go all the way to become a premium. And I'm not sure that a second-year ruckman, as good as Zach Smith is, I mean, even Josh Fraser, another number one draft pick in the ruck, and Matthew Cruiser is another example. Neither of those guys managed to get to premium scoring levels in their second year. Now, I don't think Smith is, you know, far and away of higher quality than those two. I mean, he might turn out to be a great ruckman, but ruckmen traditionally take a fair while to develop, and I'm not sure Smith is going to be quite there yet. Jacobs, to be honest, I haven't spent enough time on Jacobs. Maybe I need to go back and look at that. But that's not a bad call, I don't think, Jacobs, given he's solid without, you know, not being spectacular numbers next year. He's not a bad unique, I think.
Yeah, I liked what I've seen of Jacobs. I've liked, so he's absolutely someone who could, you know, push forward from. I think he's at about an 88 break even or something like that. So yeah, he could push forward to be a near 100 a week player. I mean, it's going to depend on, I think, you know, what the new game plan at Adelaide sees happens with him. So, you know, there's a possibility there for him to be one of the better rucks, and as you say, to be a unique ruck pick.
I mean, just looking at Jacob's numbers now, admittedly, some of these numbers are affected by the fact that he played his first 2 years at Carlton as a second ruck, but 44 in his first year, 70 in his second year, and 87 in his third year. Now, that's the sort of progression, not projection, the sort of progression is that's the word I'm looking for, that I'm expecting out of Zach Smith. And Jacob's going into his fourth year. That's the year where you'd expect, you know, fourth and fifth year is where you expect him to hit his peak. So that's not a bad call on Jacobs. Who else am I looking at here? So, well, I mean, in terms of buys, Ben McAvoy becomes important because he is the only serious candidate of the absolute premiums who has a round 13 buy. And of course, as I detailed in the blog post on the front page of Fan Footy, the ruck buys are very important this year, and because a lot of coaches are going to be going into the season with the bench of Jonathan Giles with a round 11 buy, and the other one, Oren Stevenson, with a round 12 buy, that means you need someone with a round 13 buy, pretty much, to help you avoid the donuts. So Ben McAvoy becomes important there as a pretty strong second ruck. But then the only other major, I mean, I'll just talk down Zach Smith there. But the only other major option there is Matthew Kruse, but I don't think Kruse. I mean, I've just talked about development, and he's coming into his third year, I believe. But do you think Kruse can reach the numbers that McAvoy's reached as of last year?
It's going to be tricky for him because he has a lot of competition in the ruck that McAvoy didn't have last year. And it's uncertain whether he'll play. I haven't heard a lot out of Carlton whether he'll play a lot forward again this year. But, you know, he looks a great player and one that, if his body holds up, could put some good numbers up. But, yeah, you're just not sure about that role that he'll play down there.
Just looking at Kruse's numbers, he's actually in his fourth year this year. And of course, he did struggle with returning from injury last season. Obviously, he had that ACL halfway through the 2010 season and returned from it halfway through the last season. And his numbers were 10 points down in Dream Team and 5 points down in Supercoach. So, I mean, look, averaging 66 in Dream Team last year, his previous 2 years averaged 75. What, in terms of his ceiling, I wouldn't be expecting any more than 80 or 85, and I'm not sure that's enough. I mean, look, 20 points of improvement out of any player, but maybe if he gets 85, I'd actually, if I think he can get 85, I might pick him. But I'm just, I mean, if he reaches 75, I don't think that's enough for a second ruck.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Now, did Lobey get injured at Port? I mean, do you think he also has that round 13 bye? And showed a little bit towards the end of the last season.
Well, I've just spent a year. You know, I've just spent a fair amount of time bagging out Zach Smith for being a second year ruck, and that's exactly what. Well, I mean, look, Lobey is a little bit. I think he's spent a year or two more in the system, but I don't see him as being all that different to Smith. So I'd see the same. He may be a slightly older body, but I don't see his development as being any greater than Smith's. And so I think again. Yeah. He's not going to be able to reach that the upper echelon, I don't think.
Yeah, I can't remember if I saw him get an injury as well. He might have got a serious injury during the preseason. I'll have to check that out at some point.
All right. Now, we should, of course, mention the fact that I mean, the just looking at the numbers here, I think 80% of coaches have Stevens, Oren Stevenson of Geelong and Jonathan Giles of Western Sydney as their bench. So do you see any... So I'm just looking for other possible candidates for bench spots. And the two names that jump out at me are Adam Patterson of the Hawks. Now, you'd probably be know more than I would about the actual likelihood of him getting off the rookie list and playing. And, of course, the other one is Sam Rowe. Now, both of those players have dual eligibility. I'm not sure how important that's going to be this year because there's not a huge amount of premiums who actually have it. But could you see Patterson and or Rowe, maybe even actually as a dual position tandem, can you actually see those two working together, or do you think Stevenson and Giles is just a no-brainer?
Well, I think Stevenson is absolutely, you know, even if he doesn't, unless something happens in the preseason that he does a knee or something, God forbid, you know, there's no way he's not going to have a lot of game time for Geelong with their injury troubles and their retirements, you would believe. So, you know, I think was he the most picked ruck overall?
Who, Stevenson?
Yeah.
No, it's actually Giles. And Giles is actually getting more love as a starter. He's actually starting in 10% of teams, Giles is.
Right.
So, which I can understand why, because Stevenson, you would think, would be behind Blake in terms of time on ground, and whereas...
Blake's still there?
Yes. Not Blake. Who am I thinking of? The other bloke there.
West.
Whereas you would think that Brogan would be behind Giles at Port, and there's not much else there, really. So it's pretty much Giles and that's it, and Brogan, you know, providing support. So, I mean, if you're looking for the number one ruckman to start every week, then I think that's actually a good choice to go with Stevenson over... to go with Giles over Stevenson.
Yeah, I can see that, but I'm going to check it out, but I thought West was injured. Isn't West injured?
Mm.
So, I mean, I thought that even pushed Stevenson up. But, yeah, I mean, Giles is absolutely... He looks like a good prospect. You know, so whether he can cement that role, having played with the team all year, he could be an interesting one on the bench as well. I think those two are just locks for the bench. Adam Patterson, I like a lot what he gives to Hawthorn, where they got him, e.g. as a rookie, as you know, a sort of utility big man if it hits the fan and we have some injuries. But I don't see that, unless there are problems, him forcing his way into the side. So I wouldn't see him a good fantasy pick unless something happens over the preseason to the Hawk ruck division.
Just looking at the Trent West situation, so there was an article about a week ago on afl.com.au detailing how it was actually Simpson and Vardy who had injuries that had been put them out until June or July, and it's pretty much West and Stevenson are the ruck division down at Catland. So that's pretty
much I mean Stevenson's a much older player, so there's and I could be wrong on this, but West hasn't necessarily cemented himself as a starting ruck. You could see that Stevenson could shoulder still a lot of the workload, having the mature body.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's 24, so I mean, he's not a spring chicken, but I certainly see what you mean. But I think obviously we're going to see in the preseason, but Giles looks to be the safer bet, given that, you know, we saw him last year in the NAB, and he looked pretty good, and he's definitely got the number one role over Brogan, you would have thought, because Brogan looked like he was pretty much done last year, and he's taking a paycheck at this point. Anyway,
So do you see any? I mean, I don't think we really talked about Mumford. How about Mumford? He had a pretty much...
I didn't mention him because I think that's pretty much, you know, there's not really much to talk about. He's pretty good, and if you want him, then get him. And I don't think there's any argument from us if you want him. It's just a matter of, you know, of working the buys, I think. So, yeah, there's a couple of players who I've passed over, and in passing over them, I don't mean to denigrate them, but it's just that, you know, if you want them, then get them, and we don't necessarily have any quarrel with some of these picks, and, you know, if you, as I said, if you want them, then there's no problem. Now, speaking of people who, if you want them, get them. Now, you actually mentioned on Twitter today, when I was talking about doing player research, you wanted to talk about Lance Franklin. Now, he's another player who I was actually not going to talk about because I thought, well, what's the point? Everyone loves him. He's great. He's going to be number one scorer or thereabouts again. What's the big idea? Why would we talk about him?
Well, I mean, I had a look at his first six games of the year, and I felt, apart from, well, let's start with the first five games of the year. He has four pretty tricky games, I would say, in the first four games. He has Collingwood, Geelong, Adelaide, you know, maybe they're a bit decimated, especially if Rutten doesn't come up. He's got a foot injury, I believe, and they've lost their two centre-half backs in Bock and the other guy,
Davis.
Yep. That's right, in the last 2 years. But then coming up against the Eagles and Swans, there's a chance that he could have a slow start to the year, in much the same way that Goddard did last year. You know, maybe not the same, because I think he will bounce back, possibly against St Kilda, although that could be a tough game as well in round six. So, you know, in looking that, I think it was the winner of Supercoach started off without Goddard, that maybe, you know, there is a thought to hold off on Franklin for those first 6 weeks and look at him as your first upgrade after around round six or seven, because, you know, we're going to start off with some young players in your side who you're going to look to upgrade, and mid-price players that you're going to look to upgrade. So, you know, you're going to bring in premiums. So perhaps Buddy is at such a high level now that he will have a bit of a drop off with those tough six games to start with.
All right. How's his body? Is he still struggling with wrist and all the other things?
I think the word is that he's looking pretty good. Mm. So, I mean, that's one risk in that, that he could get off to a hot start.
Mm. That would be my response, basically, that he's had other years where he's struggled in, you know, early doors with, or even, you know, all the way through the season with some chronic little niggly injuries, and I'm you know, from what I gather, I think he's pretty, you know, right to go this year, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, he comes up against Tarrant round one, and Tarrant and Brown, Tarrant anyway, round one. And Reed,
yep,
in round one, and then, and probably without Roughhead at that stage, with Roughhead's.
That's a good point. So when is Roughhead coming back? Because I could see Franklin without Roughhead. If Roughhead's missing until round six, say, certainly that could be a bad trot for Buddy.
I mean, I could see him scoring hundreds in some of those rounds, but I could also see him scoring his lowest scores in that first six rounds. I mean, coming up against Geelong in round two, which is always tough for the forwards with their, you know, outstanding back line. And then, you know, the Eagles, I think he does okay against. And Adelaide, as I say, decimated a bit. And originally I said St Kilda, but, you know, without, you know, Zach Dawson, as much as people joke about him, you know, they are not as tall down back as they used to be, or at least, you know, key position tall as they used to be. So, as I say, it could be, you know, it would be a risk, but it could be that unique risk that you could afford to take.
Yeah, I did one of those. Unique. Yeah, I had one of those a couple of years ago where I left out Luke Hodge, and that didn't work out too well. I've got burned by that one before, trying to second guess bad starts to seasons, but look, we're now getting onto the forwards now. Just to close off the ruck discussion, we're being reminded by Reconfigure on the chat that Sandilands actually had turf toe, not stress fracture. So thank you, Tony Reale, aka Reconfigure. on the chat. And of course, you can join us on the chat every week. That we do. I'm not sure we're going to be doing weeklies before the season, but when we do shows, we are at fanfooty.com.au/video, and you can join us and see the live video and sometimes video, sometimes just audio, and join in the chat on the Fanfooty website. Now, we're now talking about the forward premiums, and Franklin, of course, is one of the number of premium centre half forwards who we need to talk about. Matthew Pavlich apparently has slimmed down in the pre-season. Nick Riewoldt, of course, coming back from his injury-riddled season last year. And, of course, Jonathan Brown coming back from his terrible facial injuries. Both Pavlich and Riewoldt seem to be fairly unpopular with fantasy coaches. And but Brown is, I think, number three or four? It's actually number three, most popular forward, Molly. Now, I don't see a hell of a lot wrong with Pavlich or Riewoldt going forward, and I'm surprised that Brown is so popular. I mean, I know he's underpriced, but I can't see the Brisbane line forward line with no Mitch Clark and with Brent Staker injured to start the season. And, I mean, they've got basically a bunch of kids and a bunch of midgets, and the midgets are kids as well, pretty much, because they've got no Luke Power down there either, as of this year with Western Sydney poaching him. So it's pretty much Jonathan Brown is the big tree amongst the ferns down there in the forward line, and I just don't like that for the forward press. I think he's going to get flooded, and I just don't like that for Brown scoring, and I'm surprised that he's number three most popular forward, Molly.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I guess the thing that makes him, that does make him attractive is he's priced at about 67, and he's got a reasonably good early start to the year. From just having a quick look, you know, he's got a Melbourne and a Gold Coast and a Carlton in there, Greater Western Sydney, North and West Coast. So some good games and some bad ones. I guess that's the reason is as we say, that lower price that he's starting off with due to the injuries and the likes over the last few years. But yeah, I do take your point that he is going to have a hard time with his lack of a supporting cast, so to speak. Although, you know, there's a lot of promise in his midfield, so you know he should get a lot of the ball coming in nicely to him. You know, it could with Leuenberger, you know, heading down to their midfield, they could still have a lot of ball get down to him in a nice manner.
I hope for his sake that Daniel Rich has a better season this year, because he does need someone to deliver the ball a lot better, because, of course, Simon Black, champion as he is, his foot is really his whole groin apparently he's struggling with OP, and the penetration on his kicks has just been gone. I think his disposal efficiency by foot dropped about 10 points last year, down below 60. So that's the Rockliffe and Redden, great accumulators. I'm not sure their usage is all that great in terms of delivering on a platter like Black used to, and that's something which Rich obviously can deliver. But that's something which hopefully, we'll be reliant on injury, which he suffered from last year. But now, what about Pavlich and Riewoldt, Molly? Again, their numbers in terms of popularity slightly down on where I'd expect them to be. I think Riewoldt's about 10th, and Pavlich is way down. He's about 20. He's in the mid 20s in terms of the ranking in the forwards in popularity. I don't see a whole lot wrong with Pavlich. I mean, he struggled a bit last year, but then again, so did Freo. So I suppose you have to figure out, is Freo actually going to bounce back this year? And the same thing with St Kilda and Riewoldt. They're a bit the same, these two. But do you expect? Do you think they are reliant on their teams, or is it maybe that the teams are reliant on them too much? And because they're having bad years, whichever it is, do you expect both of them to bounce back this year?
Yeah, absolutely. Riewoldt had an under par year for him, absolutely. I wouldn't have said Pavlich did as much. It wasn't as good as he may hope, but it wasn't too bad either. So I think, you know, the worry for him may have, or for people considering him, may have been what sort of game plan will Ross Lyon bring in to affect his scoring. And I think I've heard them say that he's going to play forward a lot more. And you'd have to think that Ross Lyon coming from having Nick Riewoldt, that, you know, he's able to have a game plan that suits a centre-half forward like a Pavlich or a Riewoldt. So at least you can tick that box off. And as for Riewoldt, yeah, coming off that tough year, injuries, I guess that's why he wasn't as popular as he has been in the past. And again, the new game plan, this time more unknown. But, you know, I would have thought some people would have seen that as a positive, that he may be, you may be able to get a bit of a bargain in him, being at the lower price because of the trouble that he did have.
All right, we'll run through a few more of the more traditional forward premiums. Steve Johnson and Paul Chapman finished number one and number two, respectively, at the top of the forward averages last year, but Johnson's languishing at about the high teens and Chapman at about 20 in the popularity in the forwards this year. I guess people are always looking for upside and they just can't see any with Johnson and Chapman, can they?
Well, I mean, you're always expecting at some point, you know, the age in Geelong is going to make them drop off, but it's just not happening. And you know, I think having one of those two guys in your team is probably a good starting point. I wonder also, and I'm not sure whether the fan planner saw this coming as such, but for me, looking at the forwards in Dream Team, there is a lot more midfielders masking as forwards who to me look very juicy, you know, the Fifes and Martin and Lewis and Sybot guys.
We'll get to those guys. I have a lot of misgivings about a lot of those players. And this is why I'm bringing up the likes of Johnson and Chapman. And you can throw in Adam Goods and Ryan O'Keefe. What the hell did they do wrong? They did nothing wrong. They delivered 22 games of low end keeper, you know, solidity. Did nothing wrong, and yet they're also fairly unpopular. And you can probably so those four, I feel, are underappreciated going into this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would have at least one of those, of all four of those, if not one of each from either team.
So in essence, Molly, old guys rule is what we're trying to say, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, and a guy like Stevie Johnson, he's just a freak. You know you're going to get some games where he just can't be bothered, but you know you're going to get some games where, you know, he's going to put up some big numbers. So, I mean, Paul Chapman, you know, the age-old problem with him is worry of injury. And again, with those buys in the middle of the season, that's probably an additional worry. Mm. But, yeah, Goods, I mean, again, he's a bit like Johnson. There's some games where he goes missing for no apparent reason, unless he's watching the royal wedding or something. And he definitely is someone you would look at. But O'Keefe, yeah, again, he's someone who's a bit up and down. In, you know, I think in some people's opinion, and that can be a bit frustrating.
All right. Now moving on to talk about frustrating. Alan Dydak this year. Gee. Cloak had a very good middle part of the season and then fell away again. So, I mean, with Collingwood, you're not expecting a drop-off like you are with Geelong. Do you give Dydak and Cloak another chance this year, or do you think their standard deviation is just too high?
Yeah, I mean, that is a little bit of a worry that, as you say, I think Cloak is pickable. Absolutely. I think he's going to have another good year. There's no reason for him not to, unless something changes in the Buckley game plan that you just couldn't see coming. But, he's absolutely pickable. Dydak's probably more of the worry getting older, had some injury worries. You know, do you see that the injuries that he had during the preseason last year into the season were the reason for his poor form, and that if I haven't heard how he's gone through preseason this year, will that sort things out? You know, who knows? So I guess the other thing too, I haven't heard whether, you know, they moved Davis, who was a struggling, who struggled in the forward line in the end, and moved him back. Would they consider something like that with Dide? Probably not. I don't think he has that. He has too much of a flair that Davis sort of didn't have as much of. So, you know, maybe not as a chance. So,
all right.
Yeah, I mean,
yep. No, we'll keep on moving, but we've still got a lot of players to get to. So. We'll move on to a few of those mid/forwards that you were talking about, Molly. David Zaharakis, I like Zaka. I think he's the sort of player who sort of accumulates surreptitiously, almost, that he'll play at the Docklands, and he might not necessarily play on you know, prime time TV, but he's not a huge injury risk, and I think on that fast track of Docklands, he's well suited to his skills, and he's got a much less standard deviation than someone like Monfries in that same side. I mean, you look at his numbers, they are actually still up and down, but at the end of the day, the numbers are pretty good in totality. And I think he ended the season a little bit better than he started. So I think he'll be thereabouts, but I mean, he's one of those players who he will be frustrating because he'll deliver you a 130 this one week and then he'll deliver you a 260. So. That, some coaches don't really like those sort of players. So, I mean, it's a matter of personal taste, I think.
Yeah, no, he's coming along nicely. This will be his fourth year. He's priced reasonably, about 90, so, you know, you're going to get a lot out of him to make him worth your while. But, you know, he's had that nice 7-18 progression that, you know, he could push up to be a near 100-a-week guy. So, absolutely someone you could consider in the forwards. As I said, with the amount of midfielders there, there's some a bit easier than other years where we've had to rely on the tall forwards who can be a bit more hit and miss.
All right. Now, Nathan Fyfe, Molly, those who brought him in the middle of last year, I think Skooks was one of those we had on the show. They needed to buy a lottery ticket. It's fair dinkum. The amount of packs that Nathan Fyfe threw himself into, and the amount of times during the middle of the season he popped his shoulder out, and you'd expect him not to play out the season, but he did, and he kept on scoring, Molly. So, well, I mean, is it a matter of time before that starts again, or is he going to be turning to Jason Porplesia? Is my question.
Well, I mean, I guess that's the only worry on him, in my opinion. I mean, he is a class footballer, so your only worry is can he stay in the park? And he did for 21 rounds last year, so the only thing that stopped him was when I finally brought him into my side and he decided to have a bye at the end of the season. So, you know, I think I think there's still a lot of, you know, that he's the sort of a class player that you can definitely risk on with, as you say, throwing himself into packs and the likes, because he just accumulates the ball. It's quite ridiculous, really.
Now, one very surprising stat I have seen is the almost complete lack of Colin Sylvia in fantasy teams. I mean, it's about 2%, which is really, really low. And I know he had a quad scare at training last week, but the stats I'm looking at are for the entire preseason, not just the last 6 days.
Yeah.
And he's almost completely non-existent in fantasy teams. I mean, I know, you know, he's not really a likable fella. I mean, he wears berets for Pete's sake. But does that disqualify him from fantasy perspective? He's a decent scorer and he's a midfielder playing forward. I mean, if you're going to be picking the likes of Beams or side bottom, why not Sylvia?
Well, I mean, as one of our chats say, he is suspended for round one.
Yeah,
but still, he can be a bit of a head case, I think, is the other problem with him. He's unreliable in that sense. Mm. I think that's the thing that turns people off him, is that, you know, his standard deviation probably isn't good, I would imagine. And he can be very up and down, so, you know, in that sense. So, you know, if you told me you knew he was going to put 100% in for a full season and you're going to see the real Colin Sylvia every week, you know, he would be Stephen Johnson territory, but, you know, he just goes missing too often. And that side as well, I think that's a worry as well. You know, maybe with... who was the guy from Brisbane they got with Clark, you know, maybe that will make his life a lot easier now that they have a real target and Watt's on the improve, that, you know, he's not expected to carry that forward line as much anymore. Maybe there's some room for him there, but, you know, it's going to be a tricky, you know, he's that tricky player that, you know, you say you don't want to get Drummond in the back line because of his injuries. Well, you just don't want to get Sylvia because of his brain fade.
Yes, looking at his numbers, I mean, 7 full seasons apart. I mean, he had one three-game season to start off with, but 16, 15, 16, 18, 17, 15, 19, which of course tells you that he never plays a full season out. So I suppose that's a something Goybon on the chat is saying Sylvia is dead to me. That's probably a common theme of those who...
Yeah, a lot of that it did towards the end of last year.
All right, now we'll move on to some of the players who have gained new forward eligibility. And Dustin Martin, Molly, he is currently the second most popular, I think it is. Yes, second most popular. A little bit behind Buddy in terms of forward popularity for the starters. I mean, I like Martin, obviously, being a midfielder, but I like him more for Dream Team than I do for Supercoach. I'm not sure he's got the quality by foot to really deliver huge Supercoach scores, but that's probably a prejudice I have about the entire Richmond team. They do tend to kick helicopter kicks, so that's pretty much how I imagine most Richmond games are turning out, having watched most of them over the past 7 years. But do you think Martin is a DT-only play, or do you like him as Supercoach as well?
I mean, I think he has the ability to move into the Supercoach ranks, but, you know, he does a lot of the hard things and gets things out quickly at times, so that can go against him in scoring those extra points, so... I would have to check it out, but yeah, I mean, he's got a 9-point differentiation last year between his Dream Team and Supercoach. So, you know, if you think he's going to have a good year in Dream Team and maintain that sort of ratio, then, you know, he's going to be equally relevant in Supercoach.
Yes, he is. Looking at his numbers, he did average 99 in Supercoach last year. Maybe that's not necessarily due to disposal efficiency, but more about the new pressure stat, because a lot of his stats would have come under pressure, even though they might not reach their target all that much. But maybe it's just a prejudice on my part, so I'm prepared to give that up. So look, he's averaged 89 in Dream Team as of last year. Do you think he can reach 100 this year?
He can be pushing right towards it, and I mean, as a forward, that's what you want. You know, 90 plus for a forward is about the rate that you need out of a forward. So I think that's why I think these mob of midfielders posing as forwards are going to make the job of us picking these sides a lot easier.
Mm. All right, on to the two mid forwards from Collingwood, who just gained forward eligibility. Molly, Dane Beams is the one who I would have thought should have been the more popular one, but it's actually Steele Sidebottom who is more popular by a ratio of about 2-1. He's twice as popular as Dane Beams is. Now, obviously the reason for that is that Sidebottom is priced about 10 points cheaper, but I would have thought that there is a reason for that, is because Beams is probably more likely to score 10 points more per game than Sidebottom is. I don't see Sidebottom's ceiling as being equivalent to Beams. I think Beams is a higher scorer. Sidebottom's standard deviation is likely to be higher. I don't see necessarily a reason why Sidebottom should be twice as popular as Beams. I would be picking Beams over Sidebottom. What about you, Molly?
Yes, I think I agree with you. Just looking at I'm just having a look at his stats on the AFL site, the AFL Dream Team site. And if their projections are right, then you'd be mad not to have him. They've got him averaging about 120 to 130 for the year. So
this is being
I'm not sure if they need to work on their projection stat, but yeah, I mean he has had a great time of it so far in his career. He looks a great player, and if it wasn't for such a strong midfield already, he'd probably have, you know, he could be averaging up there with Pendlebury and Swan if those two guys weren't there. But, you know, 100 for a forward is definitely something that you would be looking at, and he's young and doesn't really have a history of injury concerns, so he has to be one you consider.
Apparently, Nathan Buckley on the Dream Team Talk pre-season episode talked up Sidebottom in midfield, but I don't see it all that much. I think Beams has got him covered, and will have for averages. There's a lot of talk these days about forwards moving midfield, and I think Sidebottom is one who probably would be better suited forward. Beams obviously does play a bit forward as well, but in more of a cameo role, I would have thought. But anyway, moving on. Now, Mitch Robinson, Molly, another one who I think is overrated in fantasy circles. His popularity in, he's about 12th, I think it is, in terms of fantasy forward, just behind Nick Riewoldt in terms of numbers picked. And I don't like Mitch Robinson for fantasy this year because I think he got very lucky last year with suspension. He should have got suspended for about two or three more games than he did. I think he might have missed one game. He is given by Brett Ratton a role that's straight out of the 1970s. He throws his body around like nobody's business. It's not really part of the modern game, the way he plays. He would have been suited much better suited in the 79 grand final than the sort of stuff he rolls out in 2011. And I think he's just a big suspension waiting to happen. Not only one, but several, you know, consecutively, because he doesn't seem to be able to learn his lesson. He's going to play the way he's going to play, and it's going to catch up with him at some stage. And I think, you know, this year it might as well be this year as much as any.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you, and I think he's sort of at the, anyway, forgetting that, he's at the top of his point scoring total. I think he can play better as a footballer, but I'm not sure it's going to translate into many more Dream Team points or the likes. And the guys around him are probably less of a risk in such. Having said that, I did have Jordan Lewis on my side, and after your little talk there, I'm starting to think that maybe he's got a lot of the same problems and maybe should be taken out of my side very soon.
Well, he was actually the next player on the list. Now, the reason I included him was obviously that he had what I considered to be a game I didn't really expect he even had left in him, that preliminary final. I didn't think he could play like that anymore. I thought that it was. I mean, he played like Jimmy Bartel basically in the grand final did in that preliminary final. So my question to you, Molly, is where did that come from? And what's going to happen this year? Is he going to go back to playing a forward role? It seems like both Bartel and Lewis, I mean, Bartel has been, you know, used in stopgap roles and a bit of a Goddard sort of utility role the last couple of years. And then in finals, they'll throw him into the middle where he should have been really for the duration of the season, but for whatever reason they've decided to keep him out of there. They throw him in the guts, Bartel, and he just wins games off his own boot. And that is almost what Jordan Lewis did in that preliminary final. So it tells me, what the hell are they doing having him as a defensive forward when he can do that? And is he going to be able to do it again?
Well, I mean, I think the answer is that both sides are pretty good in their midfield. They're pretty deep, and they can afford to have these guys out of the midfield. I think the other, I wouldn't like to comment on Geelong as much, but I know with the Hawthorn one, it can be a bit one-paced if you have Lewis and Hodge and Mitchell all in there at the one time. So to have a young guy like Shields and some of the other guys, you know, a Bateman tagging in there as well, and you know, Rioli pinch hitting there as well. Savage and the likes, and Isaac Smith to a lesser degree on the wing. That just speeds up the side a bit more and makes them a bit less predictable on their pace. But yeah, they're just classy guys when they get the ball. I mean, you know, I would say the Sydney game was pretty good from Lewis as well, and the Western Bulldogs he put up a big score against as well. So
in terms that's probably
what makes him you know juicy as a forward, because he has the ability to score well.
So under the theory, which is not obviously set in stone, that a rising tide lifts all boats. I think I've just that's a terrible mixed metaphor I just used then. Anyway, if Hawthorn is going to be lifted towards the flag, as people keep on saying this year, I mean even the DT Talk boys were talking about it in their preseason episode the other day. Is Lewis going to be lifted, along with the rest of the Hawthorn side? I mean, if the ball's going to be spending even more time in the Hawthorn forward line, can he lift his numbers from, you know, 90-odd up towards 100?
I think he potentially can, but, yeah, I'm not real sure whether he will or not. But I think at 90, again, he's if he can raise it to 95, that's what you want from a forward. So, you know, he has the potential to be one of the best forwards, seeing as he now has that eligibility. When no longer judging him on what we would have judged him on last year, and that was, can he go to 100 and even go to 110? Now we're really looking, can he get to 95 going on 100? Mm. So I think that is, you know, that's only 6 more points that he needs to find. So, you know, a mark and a kick a week. Now, I think the problem with thinking that Hawthorn having a better year might mean more Dream Team points is they were very Dream Team point-oriented last year because of the style they played.
True. Yes, well, I guess the question is whether they'll play that side they'll play that style even more so. But and I should say, you know, in making the comparison between Lewis and Bartel, I'm not making the bold statement that Lewis is in the same class as Bartel. But it was just, you know, I've been a critic of Lewis on this show, and that game was just one out of the box for me. I was flabbergasted by how well he played in that game, and it was Bartel-esque. In that one game. But anyway, now getting back to Geelong, Molly, a couple of Geelong players, one who I am very surprised at his popularity, Alan Christensen. Just at the bottom end of the top 10, at the eight. He's number eight in terms of popularity, just behind Steele's side bottom. I would have thought Christensen was one of those, you know, awkwardly priced players. Awkward is the word we use for his price in fantasy circles. That he's priced he's a mid price. So if you're going to buy him at the start of the year, you're going to hope that he scores like a premium. So you're going to have to score you at least 85, if not 90. And he's priced already at 68. I don't think that he's got all that much improvement left in him. And Geelong itself was there's not much improvement left in Geelong. I don't see where so many fantasy coaches. I think it's what's the percentage? He's in about 25% of fantasy coaches have him in their site. I don't see it, Molly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think who's gone out of that Geelong side that would open it up. I mean, is
Noah.
It Duncan? Well, I mean, Duncan.
Okay. So Ling is. Ling's retired.
Yes.
And what else? Who else?
I think Duncan's out pretty much the whole year with a knee, isn't he?
All right. Yeah,
is it Duncan or the other guy? That, I know there's two that I always get confused, but one of those guys is out with a knee. So, you know, I mean, I think there is thought that, you know, can he push by? Well, I mean, Shannon Burns was pretty much forgotten last year. He already had pushed by him. This will be his third year on the books, his second big year. And, you know, if you're a believer in the idea that these guys can, you know, back up a season with another good year, you know, he could, if he puts on 7, 8, 9, 10 points to his score, he's going to get up to that 75, probably not enough. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of in what you're saying about he won't, his price is awkward. If he was, you know, 50 to 60 grand less, then it would be a much easier choice.
Varko is the player you were thinking about with the knee injury, and also Wojcinski's also had a knee injury. So
now one of the, I'm pretty sure it's Duncan who did it against the Hawks.
I think he might have carried it into the finals. But
one of them did a season-ending, like, he missed the finals and all. It's Duncan is another guy I always get mixed up. I'll look at the list while we're talking.
Yes, but certainly Varko is going to miss the start of the season with an injury in Pojo. But even if there are three spots available, I don't see him scoring 90 odd from where he was. And similarly, admittedly, I have been burned by Shannon Burns. I picked him a year or two ago, and he scored 140 in the first year, and everyone was slapping me on the back and saying what a wonderful pick that was, and then he averaged about 70 for the rest of the year. I think he was priced at about 70 as well. So, I have been burned once before by the small cat forward running midfielders. So I have form on that. So I may be a bit biased when it comes to Christensen, but take my cynicism with a grain of salt.
Yeah, Pies Rock's got it. The other guy's Menzel. Menzel's did his knee, so his position is now open in that side. Right. So a little bit more job security there for.
But of course, Burns will be coming back. He missed most of last year as well. So
correct.
All right. Now, speaking of injuries, Jason Pourpleasure, Molly. He is another one who I think people are taking too much of a risk on. He's currently number 6 forward in terms of popularity. I don't see it, Molly. He is just another setback away. I know we're going to be talking about Brian Lake in the next show, who's of a similar ilk. He's held together with tissue paper, Jason Pourpleasure. I don't see it. I don't see why you would take that sort of risk. With a mid pricer. When I say mid pricer, he's not all that highly priced, but nevertheless, I don't want to take that risk. And when you're talking about soft tissue injuries, and he's also had concussions, and these can just go on and on, and I don't see him being at all solid for a fantasy team in 2012.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the head definitely says no porpoise at all. I mean, it's just, he's in the Drummond, I think we said Higgins, and there's another one. I forget who we mentioned, but Grimes, that category of players. And he could arguably be worse than all of those guys. But the heart loves, what Pourpleasure does on the footy field, and he is an enjoyable player to have in your side when he is playing. So I guess that could be the, players, dream team players remembering the good times with Jason Pourpleasure and seeing him at 200K. I mean, if you told me that he had a shoulder transplant and now had a good shoulder in there, or had a bionic shoulder in there, and it wasn't going to pop out, you'd pick him in a second. So
sure.
Sometimes you have to take a risk, and I could see some people thinking he's a risk worth taking.
Having said that, even if he did have a bionic shoulder, he used to be a dead-eyed dick in front of goal. He lost that last year. He couldn't kick a set shot to save himself. It was terrible. He had the yips. Almost as bad as Lindsay Thomas.
His one game.
Well, in the pre-season. this is across several years. Pourpleasure has lost his ability to kick set shots in the last. This also happened in 2010, I believe. His accuracy. I need to look at his accuracy, but. Yeah, where was it?
He's actually very accurate last year.
22-17, whereas I think the year before he was about 80% accurate. That was I don't see him as a the player he used to be when he came on the scene.
No, that's also a fair point. And I mean, I often wonder. I think Sticks had a shoulder injury and his kicking went off afterwards. I often wonder whether. You do drop the ball with your arm and your shoulder has to be held still, whether that has anything to do with it. So, he's definitely dropped off. So, I mean, that's the thing. I think he's not worth picking at the moment either.
All right. Another man who was made out of tissue paper, Molly, who I saw Warnie of DT Talk talk up. Jason,
and Roy.
Jason Winderlick, Molly. As I think he called him, Jason Winderlink. Because, of course, he does have dual eligibility now. I see Windelick as another poor pleasure. He's just, you know, waiting for another soft tissue recurrence, another setback, another something else. He's just not built for AFL football, I don't think. You can probably take five of these blokes, and one of them might have a 22-game season. But I can't take the chance that it's going to be one of the four of the other five. There is some possibility, and people might say, "Oh, well, you know, at the end of the season, they might come back to me and say, Jason Windelick played 22 games and was a great cash cow." But four other people who were in the same situation didn't, and I just can't take that risk, mate.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, I mean, you look at his history and, you know, this is what about his, without counting, about his 10th year and, you know, he's never reached 20 games in a season. He's had 3 years where he's over 15, 1 year of 12, and then a bunch of single-digit years. And, I mean, you know, it's sad to say, but, you know, he is injury-prone, so...
Now, one argument I've heard is that all you need to do is for him to get to the bye, you know, and then you'll upgrade him. But then the injuries will happen before then anyway, won't they? If the injuries are going to happen, they're going to happen early.
I'm not sure whether you can or cannot say that, but yeah, I don't think he's cheap enough that he's a no-brainer risk.
Mm.
He's probably a good risk, depending on what role he has. Now, I mean, the extra thing on that is, as I said to you, I was listening to Herdy on 3RW, and he did say that they've backed off Windelick and that Dempsey is actually travelling better, and that Windelick won't play till the third week of the NAB Cup. So, you know, if you're going to pick him, you're going in with, and that is the case, you're going in with very little exposed form into the season and relying on him. And, you know, I'm not sure that's a good way to go.
All right, it seems like this time every year, Molly, we hear about forwards who are going to move into the midfield. Now, of course, there were a fair few forwards that did move into... It was actually more than midfielders moved into the forward line last year, but again, we're seeing Patrick Dangerfield and Hayden Ballantyne being talked up as moving into midfield. This is... almost 100% lies spun by the coaches to... they're basically not speaking to the fans, they're speaking to the players involved to get them to work harder on the track, I think. Because, as we've seen with Dangerfield and Ballantyne specifically, they are too valuable as forwards to waste them in... Well, not waste them, but to use them in midfield, because small forwards who can kick goals and win the ball at ground level are like gold. They're like hen's teeth. Midfielders are a dime a dozen in the AFL. I'm not sure why the media keeps on reporting this, you know, straight, but they keep on doing it. And you know, it's basically every coach turns into Neil Baum at this stage. They're just lying through their teeth 100% of the time when they're talking about this sort of thing. Dangerfield and Ballantyne, Molly, can you see either of them getting through the season unscathed, which for both of them seems impossible. B, getting enough of the ball, which again for both of them, their standard deviation is very high. And C, actually playing midfield. I can't see any of those three all happening at once in the one season.
No, I mean, I guess Dangerfield for me, if you ask me which I thought was more likely, I thought Dangerfield, who probably is a natural midfielder who has been playing forward, you know, during the early parts of his career. But yeah, I totally agree with your point on coaches trying to turn these really good small forwards, which as you say are hard to get, into midfielders, you know, which can be, you know, dime a dozen. You know, I think the only one, and this could be a hawk talk coming out of me, is Rioli, who, you know...
I purposely left him out, because otherwise we'd be here all night.
Well, I'm not saying from Dream Team, but I'm saying from the phenomenon of moving into the midfield. You know, he does give Hawthorn something different there. I don't see that for Ballantyne, or, you know, I think... at rare points during his career, maybe Milner's been said of that, and you know, there's other small forwards who have had that said about them, who I sort of say, well, you know, these guys are kicking you so many goals, why would you want to move them to your midfield? But yeah, Dangerfield, he's another one of those enigma, you know, dilemmas that he has some injury concerns himself. Although he did play 22 games last year, and in saying that, had 19 and 19 the two seasons before. So, you know, he's coming up to his fifth season, or virtually his fourth season. So, you know, he threatens to break out, but just never strings the games together. And part of that is that forward role that he has in a poor side. So, new coach, you could see him throwing him into the midfield at some point. And if he did, he is someone who would be potential for, you know, 100 a week and being a very eligible forward.
All right, a couple more of these mid prices or sort of lower prices. Molly, Anthony Barabito, I am trying not to think about him at all. I'm presuming, I mean, he's going to be playing some of the NAB Cup apparently, like second, third week. Maybe. I'm presuming that he's not going to be a fantasy factor this year. I mean, some people have got him in their side, but I can't see coming off such a long-term injury and the way that Freo have traditionally used their half-forward flankers. I don't see necessarily a huge amount of numbers from that position. Now, of course, they've got a new coach in Ross Lyon, who I don't think you could say is a fantasy-friendly coach, especially for forwards. I think there are too many things against Marabito. What do you think, Molly? Are you going to be watching him closely in the NAB Cup?
I wouldn't have thought so, no. I've heard that he's still not right either.
No.
So, you know, that just adds to the point that he's probably not going to start the season off. So I don't think he's such a good pickup, you know, that you just can't pick him up. He's priced at about the top of the draft type players, so I think some of them would be better risk than him in that sort of role.
All right, and finally on the mid prices, Molly, I'm glad to report that only 1% of fantasy coaches in the Fan Planner have selected Sean Higgins, and I'm actually thinking of conducting a sit-in down at the Western Oval, Occupy Footscray, I'm going to call it. We're going to try and see if we can lobby the 1%ers to drop Sean Higgins and join the rest of us 99% who are going to be much better for the experience in 2012. I think we need to have a ban on Sean Higgins this year. Are you with me, Molly? Are you singing the Marseillaise like me?
Was Dr. Dream Team amongst that 1%? Wasn't he a big Sean Higgins fan?
He was, yes. He strikes me as a 1%er. That, but Sean, Dr. Dream Team.
I thought you were going to say that you were going to cull him. Like, just like that's a test to see whether you're worthy of being a fan footy member.
Yeah, we'll just
you,
tax them out of
Sean
existence.
Higgins in your fan planet. Sorry, we don't need you on the website.
That's the thing with doctors. They're all part of that 1%. They're both doctors anyway. All right.
Yeah, he's another dilemma. You'd love he threatens to do it, and he had that breakout season where everyone made a mint off him, but you know, he's been probably disappointing since. He's gone backwards from that season.
Mm. All right. Now we'll get on to the forward rookies. Now this is this is a fairly long list, but I mean half of it's filled with Western Sydney players, Molly. Now, I don't know about, I mean, I'll just list them out here. Israel Folau, we'll actually talk about him in depth, but I must admit, I have not spent a huge amount of time at this early stage looking over the list, but I find in the Fan Planner, there's a lot of Jeremy Cameron, there's a fair amount of Stephen Clifton, obviously high draft picks, and there's a decent amount, or not a huge amount, there's probably, you know, a handful of percent here and there of Will Hoskin-Elliott, Nick Haynes, Taylor Adams, Adam Tomlinson, Curly Hampton and Devin Smith. I can't see all of them getting in that side. I mean, how many free forwards do they want to have, but really? Yeah. And I'm not even talking about Jonathan Patton, but I mean,
he's definitely not. I'll guarantee you now he will not play.
Yes, well, of course.
At the start of the season.
No. But because, of course, he's going to be out until May with an injury, just for those who hadn't heard that piece of information. But anyway, we'll get to the other players. I suppose, you know, with Western Sydney, you've just got to throw your hands up and say, well, we'll see what happens in the NAB Cup, because we don't know what the hell's going on up there, because there's very little information comes out. But anyway, we'll get to the other players who we do know a bit about. Ahmed Saad is actually one of the more popular, not only bench players, but also starters, Molly. He's actually number nine starter, Ahmed Saad, who is the little Muslim kid who's playing for St Kilda this year. Now, of course, they have a new coach, so a small forward actually might be lucrative in that sense. I've seen a video of the kid. He does not have a left foot at all. It's pretty much just for balance. I saw him pick. There was a highlight of him picking up a ball in the square, and basically he was behind the right goalpost, but he kicked it off his right boot instead of the left boot, like it did a reverse banana from about two meters out, because he just did not have a left foot at all. So look, I'm a little bit wary about taking a very small forward. I'm not sure he's one of those defensive forwards like the Bulldogs had last season. Whose names were helping out here, Molly? Who were those two small forwards that the Bulldogs had last year? Someone on the chat's gonna sing that in a second.
Dalhouse,
yes. And there was another one there. I'm sure the chat will get. If they're in that mould, then they could be scoring, you know, 55s, which I think is what those two sort of started scoring. Which I'm not sure is start worthy at that stage. I'd probably be looking elsewhere for a starter. But, it wasn't even Hooper. There was someone else there. I think Crackbaby is mentioning Hooper, but there was another one there as well. What do you want out of a forward starter this year in terms of average, Molly? And I mean, do you think Saad can get to whatever it is that you're looking at?
Well, I mean, from a rookie forward starter, if I'm using that money elsewhere or you know, you want about 60 plus, I guess, 60 to 70. You would love 70, but, you know, 60 is the minimum you'd want if you're going to have to start him. You know, so...
I guess the question is, I mean, I've just gone through and ripped through all those mid-prices, and I'm going to be struggling to find any of those mid-prices I'm going to like starting. But the problem, of course, is that if you start the kids... they're not going to deliver hugely large scores. So how many of those kids do you actually want in your forward line? This is the dilemma I can already identify, is that going guns and rookies to the forward line is going to mean you're going to be starting some fairly unattractive prospects, I think, Molly.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm like you. I haven't had a lot of research on these guys. I'm waiting for the NAB Cup. But, you know, I think having a look at the quality at the top end with all those midfielders pretending to be forwards coming in, I'm really starting to think that it's going to be go hard on a bunch of those guys and have not many of these rookies at the bottom end. And perhaps the midfield will be where you put some more of your rookies. I mean, the last few years, history has said that the rookie midfielders are going to score all right. I mean, I guess we have had some... I was going to say, when you were talking about all those Greater Western Sydney forwards you mentioned before, that a lot of them seem to be tall forwards, and you know, not many tall forwards play well in their first few years. Mm. But, I mean, I guess Darling was the exception last year. But in general, you know, they don't.
Mm. I think it was Christian Howard I was thinking of, that small bulldog I was thinking
Someone
of.
Said Tat.
Yes. No, but he was later on. No, there was a couple of them. It may have been Hooper. You might have been, Crackbaby might have been right there. All right, now, there's a couple other candidates who, I mean, again, this is, I mean, Billy Smets from Geelong, another one who, he's not quite mature age, but he's had obviously a year out with a long-term injury last year. I mean, you can't make a judgment this early. He along with the rest of us, is going to be waiting for the NAB Cup to see whether he's actually good enough to fit into that Geelong side. Do you think the back forward eligibility he has is going to matter at all this year? Can you see any back forwards that you like at all? In terms of the upper end, so you can actually get a pair together.
Well, of course, I mean, we didn't mention it at the top of the show. You don't need to have that this year. You don't have to have that link. You could use it in a trade to swap positions with the new three-way trade system, where you can trade out, let's say, a defender, and if you've got a forward defender, swap your forward defender into defense and then bring in a forward. So there may be, you know, a reason why that is something you want to do. But yeah,
I
haven't seen a lot of them at this time.
No.
that take my eye.
No, well, I mean, I haven't seen much of him either, but he's certainly getting a few reports that he's gunning for a spot, but we'll have to see in the NAB about whether he will. Somebody who we have seen is Darren Pfeiffer. Now, of course, he's going to be playing for a new club. He was at Carlton last year, but now he's going to be playing for Port. But, of course, he is a rookie. Now, they can actually upgrade a rookie this year without any injuries because they've traded away Corns and Brogan, so they've only got one veteran on their list. So Pfeiffer is fighting with five kids for that one upgrade spot. Now, assuming that he does actually win that spot, he's going to be priced fairly low. But the issue for me is, I mean, he only played seven games back in 2008, so he's priced like a rookie, but he's mature age. I'm concerned that first of all, he's playing for Port. And I don't think Port's been a huge a happy hunting ground for rookies. There's been a lot of failures, even at the mature age end at Port in recent years. Even if he does play, I think his role is not going to be conducive to fantasy scoring. He might be playing a bit of an enforcer role, and Port games are not going to be conducive to fantasy scoring for Port players in any case. So he is getting a bit of love from the fantasy play. I think it's about 10% of them are actually starting him as a forward. Would you be looking at Pfeiffer, Molly?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, the Port puts you off. Unless he does something during the pre-season, he could... Sorry, I'm laughing. Someone at the... Brenton in the chat says, the issue with Darren Pfeiffer for me is that he's Darren Pfeiffer.
He is indeed Darren Pfeiffer. He's, that's a very correct analysis there.
That may be the best analysis we can get out of it. So, I do like his sister, though.
Do you really?
Like, Michelle.
Oh, yeah. Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha, ha. That's, yes, this is the traditional coach's box level of jokes.
Dad jokes.
That's right, yes. Yes, we should get on to talking about other forwards. Now, Tommy Walsh, Molly, as you said before, key forwards don't traditionally do very well. Key forwards at Sydney, there's been a few success stories there in terms of rookies, I can recall. But as far as Irish key forwards... I mean, I know Tommy Walsh is supposed to be a great player, and he was a great player in Gaelic.
Wasn't he meant to be the next Wayne Carey?
He was supposed to be the great white hope of some description, yes, but he never got a game for St Kilda, which tells me something. I'm not quite sure what it tells me, but it tells me something, and it's not good. I think Sydney are a bit too enamoured with... foreign success stories. Obviously, they've had a good run with Ty Keneally, and they've had a decent run with Mike Pike. And I think that Walsh is another challenge for them, and it's a stunt pick. But I'm not sure whether he's actually good enough. Because if he was good enough, he would have got one game for Ross Lyon. I'm presuming Ross Lyon didn't actually hate him for anything other than his footy. Why didn't he get played? I mean, if he got zero games at St Kilda, given how badly they were doing last year, I just don't see... And given how much they needed a forward, I don't see why... If Ross Lyon didn't think he was worth playing, why we should think he is.
Wasn't that one of the issues with Ross Lyon at St Kilda, that he wouldn't play the kids? So, I mean... I'm not sure that Sydney have been much better, but there's as always happens, the pre-season and even the after-season trade period suddenly guys that couldn't get a game are the next Wayne Carries, and how could they have been traded, and why? How could you have stuffed it up to have, you know, made him want to be traded? But, you know, he's one that I'm going to watch over the preseason, but, you know, I think there's going to be better options around, and I think the guy underneath him is getting all the raps as a rookie.
Look, I'm going to be loving saying the name Dane Zorko all year. I think he's the next player we're talking about now. I believe he is actually the great nephew of the great Dr. Hans Zorko, who was a famous scientist, Molly, who I'm sure you wouldn't be intimately aware of the wonderful career of Dr. Hans Zorko, Molly. You know who I'm talking about?
Was he in Zork, the game?
No. Hans Zorko. Don't you remember? He assisted Flash Gordon in defeating Ming the Merciless.
Yes.
Don't you know your Queen songs?
I know
this
song.
Yes.
That was
Zorkov. The Zorko, obviously the V is silent in Dane Zorko's name. I mean, obviously we know that.
He dropped it off to lessen the fun, just
so he wouldn't get teased at school, really. Because, I mean, you know, Zorko's a pretty cool name. Zorkov, not so much, but he's, I mean, I'm sure this is a silent V is what I'm saying. Anyway, yes, Dane Zorko as a mature age player, as a lot of the good prospects, the good rookie prospects are, the fantasy rookie prospects are this year. He and, I mean, the next name I got there, Torrey Dixon, much the same. You know, smaller players, mature age. Assuming they have decent NAB Cups, they're going to be in my side, Molly.
Well, you are a great fan of the mature age player, and it has proven to be something that we should all be good fans of. So, absolutely, we're going to have a look at these guys and see what they can do during the NAB Cup.
I'd much rather have either of those two, even if they have poor NAB Cups, than Tommy Walsh, because traditionally, you know, the smaller forwards are better scorers in the early part of their careers than key forwards. This is a statistical fact. All right, now, finally, as I said, we're not going to be going through all the Western Sydney players, but we do need to talk about Israel Folau. Because he has got runs on the board, well goals on the board, in terms of being a full forward and actually kicking goals. Now we saw last year that the Gold Coast forward line wasn't a very good. I mean, I certainly suffered through Charlie Dixon's year, and a lot of other players would have, and I also suffered through Tom Lynch. So I like Israel Folau as a better prospect for a full forward in an expansion side, obviously as Western Sydney is, because the ball, I presume the ball's going to get down there. Obviously with the Gold Coast, the ball would get out of the centre down to the forward line, but then it would immediately get rebounded back. I think the issue with Western Sydney is they might actually not get the ball at all, because their engine room is nowhere near as good as what Gold Coast was, and the ball might not actually get down to the Western Sydney forward line at all. So I don't think we'll actually get an answer on that one in the NAB Cup, because it'll be, you know, the competitive situation will be different. Do you expect Western Sydney to get smashed every week by 100 points and for Folau not to get any service at all? Or do you think he's actually going to get enough to... I mean, even assuming that he's actually able to deliver if he gets decent supply, do you think he's actually going to get decent supply out of the midfield that they've actually assembled at Western Sydney?
It's hard to say. I mean, they have got a few good senior players in that midfield. So it's going to be a matter of how they structure it with the kids and whether they sort of, you know, chop and change a bit in that sense. So,
You look at Ablett and Riscatelli and Brennan, and who else do they have in there? Harris and Andrew Swallow. Now you compare that with Scully, a good player, but a small player, needs bigger bodies around him.
Yep.
Ward, who I think is a little bit overrated, just technically. I mean, I think he came off the wing mostly for the Bulldogs. Yep. I'm not sure he's a rotation inside midfielder. And who else have they got in that midfield? Reece Palmer. Not an A rotation midfielder. He's a B at best. I just don't think they've got the engine room that Gold Coast
Power.
Have. Power? No, Power's going to be a forward.
Right.
He's going to be a small forward.
There's one more they had, I'm sure. I mean, they've got Brogan in the ruck, so that...
No, well, he's old.
Probably had it he's probably hard had to go on the field. Yeah, I mean, I think that is going to be the worry about picking any forwards for GWS. And I mean, we all thought the Gold Coast were going to be a money pit for players all over the ground, and really it was mainly their midfield and a couple of... Well, I'm not even sure, was there a defender? I mean, I guess... who was it who played forward, the ex-Collingwood player who... Stanley.
Yep.
But, I mean, apart from that, from and Smith, I mean, I don't remember them having a, you know, just a plethora of guys who were really good value in the end.
I think part of the problem with Gold Coast was that they had a bunch of tall blokes in Dixon and Lynch and Smith going down there, and they were like trees, and the smaller blokes didn't work hard enough to rove to them, and the whole system didn't work. The ball just came back out of there way too easily.
No, I mean, that's it. And, I mean, the same sort of thing is going to happen to some degree with GWS. Yeah. I mean, maybe Choco Williams will be able to do something that will help them out, but, you know, you think they're still going to struggle with, you know, small bodies and poor delivery and the like. So, you know, I think that's going to be a worry for them as well.
Put it this way, I'd love to have Israel Folau on my team, and I'll be looking at him very closely in the in the pre-season. But yeah, he's got a fairly short leash, being in my plan team at the moment.
Is it fair to say that it's going to be more likely that he's going to have a better fantasy season than
real season?
Michael, what's his name? Carmichael Hunt did in his first season.
Good question.
I think
he'll have more points, definitely. Because I think Hunt was averaging about 15, wasn't he? Something ridiculous like that. It was terrible what he was averaging. It was about 20 at best.
No, I think he played better than a lot of people thought, but he was definitely not a fan. He was nowhere near the fantasy realm. Whereas I think Folau looks like he'll be able to take a mark if he gets the opportunity, and he looks like his kick's okay for, you know, as good as some of the guys who, you know, we see going around. I mean, let's face it, we as Hawthorn supporters see some guys who have some pretty ordinary kicks for goal from set shots.
Well, I mean, Carmichael averaged less than 30, which is, I mean, that's almost impossible. It's pretty hard to do that to not get that much ball in today's footy. But I could see Folau averaging 40 very very easily, but. I mean, obviously, from that sort of position, you need 55 minimum, and you'd be liking 60s and 65s. But I'm not sure he can actually accumulate that much. He'll get plus 12s or plus 7s. You know, he takes big marks and goes back and tries to kick a goal. I'm not sure he's going to get a whole lot of other types of stats. That's the issue for me. I'd love to see him. Do well and, you know, get a few plus 14. He will get the odd plus 14 where the tackle free kick goal, but I think this is it's going to be a stretch for him, and it's more hopeful than anything else that he's in my plan team at the moment. But I'm sure there'll be other candidates who'll be more worthy who'll bob up in the preseason. Anyway, that is the first coach's box of the 2012 season. And I think we've just about exhausted both of our voices from the sound of it, Wally. So we better wrap this up fairly quickly. As I said, I'm not sure if we're doing one next week, but the next one we will do, we will cover the backs and the midfield. And hopefully,
well, I think if we miss next week, it'll be just before the NAB Cup starts.
Definitely, it'll be either next week or the week after. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway,
absolutely.
Yes, and glad to have you back for another year, Molly. And hopefully, it long may continue. And we'll be coming up to 150 as of probably the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season. So we haven't had a celebration show, so we should do that at some stage. but I'm sure it'll come.
We could put out just a silent episode of our greatest highlights, could we? Or
the greatest dad jokes. Yes. Okay. That'll be a short show. Yes.
Someone in the chat earlier said we should put out all that bloopers, and I thought that's what the podcast was.
That's one long bloopers. That's right. On that cheery note, we shall see you guys in probably 1 or 2 weeks. All right, thanks, Malt.
Okay, see you guys.